Today, I'm super excited to have Tim Shermack on the show. Tim is the founder and CEO of Platform Marketing, an agency that serves real estate agents. And I can hear what you're thinking, huh? Real estate agents? Those aren't restaurants. Part of our work is finding insights and strategies from those in lateral fields. And I have a strong hunch that Tim's approach and strategy is what's missing from the marketing mix of many restaurants. Tim, before we kick off here, I was there for your talk at Seven Figure Agency, and I've become an admirer of your deeply thoughtful approach and of the culture that you've created at Platform Marketing. It also seems to me that your approach is really about helping real estate agents create their own platform so they can best connect with their communities, like you'd want to do if you're becoming the mayor of your town. And I believe restaurant owners and operators will benefit greatly from a similar approach. But of course, there's way more that I don't know than what I do know. So let's dive in and find out. Welcome to Guest Getter, the best place for restaurateurs to learn the art and science of getting more new guests, getting guests coming back more often, and getting guests spending more per visit so that you can be more profitable and do more of what you love. My name's Kyle Guilfoyle. Let's hit it. I'd love to begin by asking you if there was a defining moment that put you on the path to marketing mastery and helping apply that mastery to the real estate niche.
This maybe isn't the answer you were expecting, but I think if I look back at my life and career of how I ended up in marketing, it probably would have been my youth pastor and the church I went to growing up. My youth pastor's name was John Holm. And when I started attending youth group and I was in like junior high, there was like 50, 60 kids, maybe 75 on a really good Wednesday night who would show up. And wow. By the time I graduated high school, we were more so averaging like 300 plus a night to almost 400 some nights. And it was because my youth pastor was very interested in marketing and community outreach and promotion. And he actually got me reading while I was in high school because I was really involved in youth group at the time. And I loved growing the youth group. And so at the time, I probably didn't realize, oh, I'm interested in marketing, but that's what it was, right? I was interested in marketing. He got me reading like Seth Godin books when I was in high school, and we were figuring out ways to apply some of these marketing insights and ideas into getting more kids to show up to youth group. And so that was honestly probably the first time in my life I can look back and be like, okay, why was I interested in advertising promotion? It was honestly to get more kids to show up to our youth group. Eventually, I ended up actually dropping out of college. I was majoring in economics and finance, and I realized I don't want to work in finance as a career. I'm much more interested in marketing. So I dropped out and started a marketing agency that ended up evolving into what today is Platform Marketing, which is an agency that specializes in working with real estate agents.
Awesome. And I actually just this past weekend, I saw a post you referenced that you'd made back in 2019 that made a very accurate prediction. It was referencing the death of the pixel and how we'd essentially crossed peak targeting, where people couldn't just rely on their pixel data to show up in front of the right people. They actually had to do that at the level of their copy and their creative. And we have to go back to those days where Ogilvy and Mather and all these big time advertisers were spending just bucket loads of money to get their messages in front of people. And so they needed to really craft those messages well. And so I have a bit of a two-parter. One is essentially, do I have that prediction right? And that seems to have come to bear. And secondly, now we're in 2024. Do you have a prediction right now that you see how things are going in our space?
Yeah. So five years ago, I made this Facebook post where I made some predictions that as the future of AI develops and everything, and back in 2019, basically no one was talking about this, right? But I saw the writing on the wall that like Facebook tech and ad, just the software inside of Facebook ads, was getting smarter. And marketers at the same time were getting dumber. I think we will look back collectively on the decade from like 2010 to 2020 as the golden age of online targeting of Facebook ads, let's say. Because especially in those years, 2013, 14, 15, 16, et cetera, like you could be very bad at marketing and not really know anything about copywriting or how to craft a message to a specific market. And like you could be bad at marketing and still get good results with Facebook ads in some industries because the CPMs were so cheap and therefore the cost per clicks were so cheap that you could have abysmal click rates and the math would still work out at the end of the day. In a real estate, how we saw it was people were getting leads for a dollar, in some instances, 80 cents a lead. And so like your lead conversion rate could be absolute horseshit. And if leads are coming in for a dollar a piece, even if a real estate agent converts one out of every 500 leads, that's a terrible lead conversion rate, right? Like they're still making a bunch of money because their commission is a heck of a lot larger than a $500 cost per acquisition. So that was also true in e-com. It was true in restaurants, obviously, that if you're doing marketing to your community and the clicks are coming in for 10 cents a piece, let's say, like you can have not very good ads and the math still works, right? So I think marketers didn't realize at the time that they weren't really that good at marketing. It's just that the clicks were so cheap that it gave them this false sense of confidence. Oh, I'm really good at what I do. I'm a brilliant marketer. It's no, you're just playing a game where the clicks are so cheap that it's giving you that idea. Same thing in real estate investing. When interest rates are really cheap, a lot of investors think they're a brilliant investor because it's easy to acquire properties when money is cheap, right? Same thing in crypto. Everyone thinks they're a genius crypto investor in 2017, 2018, whatever, because crypto keeps going up and up. It's everyone looks like a genius in a bull market, right? But it's how are you investing or how are you at marketing when it's not ideal? And that's the situation we find ourselves in today, where CPMs are starting to get more reasonable with Facebook ads in particular, compared to other mediums that you might be running ads in, whether it's newspaper print ads, local radio ads, et cetera. Facebook ads are no longer this incredible bargain deal compared to where else to where you otherwise might be spending that money. So we're really finding out in the last year or so who is actually good at marketing, who actually knows what they're doing and can get clients a positive return on a marketing investment now that CPMs are a little bit more expensive. So I like predicted that back in 2019 that would eventually happen. And that's absolutely 100% happened over the last year or two. Where I see things going in the future with marketing is I would say that trend is going to only accelerate. AI is obviously going to be baked into most marketing product software like Facebook Business Manager, Google, obviously, YouTube ads, et cetera. So where I think I differ from a lot of people in marketing is I don't think you need to become an expert on ChatGPT or any of the various LLMs or various AI software out there that's even just using APIs, for example, to use that you can plug into existing software. There's all sorts of like derivative AI software people are coming up with right now, right? You don't need to stay on top of all that. I certainly don't. Because I know that once something becomes mainstream enough and effective enough, the large companies that you do already know how to use their software, whether it's or Google's Ads Manager, Facebook Business Manager, et cetera, they'll just bake all that stuff into their products, right? So you don't need to become this like subject matter expert on AI. And I think what AI is going to result in is marketing is going to get more commoditized and ads are going to start looking the same. Cause you already see this, that sometimes you see a post and you're like, okay, that was definitely written with ChatGPT. It just does not sound the way that a human writes. It's like the way that we would write papers in high school or college when we're trying to impress a professor and we're using bigger words than we normally use. And we're jamming in complex sentences with semicolons where it doesn't even make sense. And it's just, you can tell when something is written with ChatGPT right now. I'm also perfectly willing to concede that like ChatGPT and other like it are going to improve and they're going to start sounding more human. And I know that you can already do that. You can say, hey, type me an essay in the voice of this, or, and obviously it does that, but most people aren't doing that. So I think marketing will get more commoditized and the value that a traditional marketing agency brings to clients, if you're doing strictly digital, Google ads, Facebook ads, et cetera, there's going to be margin compression in that industry where, you know, you're not going to be able to charge as much as you used to because a lot of what you do will be automated and clients know that, right? It's like, hey, if you're just clicking a button and all your campaigns are automatically being generated, I'm not going to pay you $2,000 a month or $1,000 a month or $500 a month or $5,000 a month or whatever your agency was charging before. So you'll have to find ways, I think, to make creativity and actual business strategy being the deliverable that you're delivering to clients, because the actual doing of the thing, the setting up the Facebook campaigns or setting up Google or SEO, like the doing of the thing is no longer the value add that people are willing to pay for. It's having the strategy of knowing what to do in a creative way of doing it. That's what'll set you apart. And I think the digital agency world blew up in the 2010s. And that's going to basically, that bubble is popping right now, because in the 2010s, a lot of little punk 19-year-old kids bought a ClickFunnels course from Russell Brunson or some Dan Henry course or something. And they're like, I'm a digital agency owner. I'm a funnel hacker, whatever. And they didn't really know anything about marketing. They just learned the very basics of how Facebook ads work, let's just say. And yeah, they probably got a dozen clients, a couple dozen clients. And so they're maybe making good money, and they've tricked themselves into believing that they're an advertising guru. And in reality, they just learned how to set up campaigns in Facebook, and they found a bridal boutique, and they're like, oh, I just need to target ads to people that are recently engaged, and I'll set up one ad on autopilot and charge my client $2,000 a month for that, for work they did once that took them 10 minutes. And there honestly was like a 5 to 7 year period where you could make a shit ton of money as an online agency owner doing like a parodied version of what I just said there, and make good money doing it. But those days are in the past. I think that's the point I'm making, is that you are really going to have to actually be good at marketing and high level like business strategy to succeed in the future, because all the lower level things that agencies may have done, AI is going to streamline a lot of that. So unless you're truly providing value at that strategic consulting level, you're not just going to be able to sign up a bunch of clients with copy and paste ad templates and charge them all $1,000 a month or $5,000 a month or whatever. Those days, I believe, are in the past. I will end with saying I think that's a really good thing that all the amateurs will get out of the industry who don't know what they're doing and were never really adding a ton of value to begin with. They were probably overcharging their clients for what they were actually delivering. And so if it thins the herd a little bit in the marketing world, I honestly think that's a good thing. So I'm excited for the future. I think my one sentence answer to your question, just to summarize all that, is the future is more about creativity than it is about automation.
Yeah, I love that. And yeah, that notion that we must become the strategic partners to our clients that they need. And the word I use a lot, especially in AI, and we see these ChatGPTisms all over the place. We see Delve and Tapestry. And in the restaurant space, we see Culinary Journey and just like stuff that, when I see it, I just want to like choke something. Anyways, that's a bit aggressive. But I think that all the tasks that are like, say, $200, $250, $300 per hour or less, that'll all be automated away. So it will be, so it's more about being thoughtful and helping our clients be as thoughtful as they can and as strategic as they can. And so on that note, I'd love to hear more about your approach over at Platform Marketing, and if as much as you're able to open the kimono and give us a look under the hood, I definitely really appreciate that. I know that our listeners would as well. I saw your talk at Seven Figure Agency. There were a number of wicked sound bites that really stuck with me, like cheap CPMs make dumb marketers. I also, this is a sidebar, but I referenced you a lot when you were talking about that, the Jetson helicopter thing, and about how will, as it becomes more and more expensive to live in cities, major metropolises, the Jetson helicopter, which is right now, like you can buy one of these things for, I think, $90,000, and you don't need a pilot's license or anything. You can fly basically that kind of technology, which while $90,000 right now is very expensive, in a few years, that'll go down and it will become an affordable vehicle. So that makes it more realistic that we could live in less populated areas where it's, you know, cheaper to live, and we can still enjoy the same benefits of the major metropolises because we can access them through vehicles like the Jets. And that was super random, but just like there are all these, you have these really phenomenal ways of looking at things and wisdom nuggets. So anyways, that's a little bit off topic. I'd love to bring in the reins here and let's keep it to, I'd love to hear about, as much as you're able to share, about how you help real estate agents get results. And then down the line, we can transpose that to the restaurant industry. That's
good. Yeah. So what we do with real estate agents could work for any sort of small business. It has really nothing to do with real estate. And that's the point. My philosophy of social media marketing, which may or may not apply to other mediums of marketing, but hopefully you can take the principles, right? But when we're talking about social media marketing, so what we do primarily is Facebook, Instagram, the best ads don't look like ads. And that sentence there is the one sentence summary of everything we do at Platform. And I think why we're so successful, because our clients are successful, is the ads that we write for them intentionally don't look like ads. So we don't want super polished videos or professional. If we ask a client to get us a photo, I don't want you to hire a professional photographer to take the photo in a studio and it's like airbrushed and everything. Like, we want it to be gritty looking, real looking, authentic looking, like the photos you would post on your personal profile if you were out to grab a slice of pizza or a coffee, or you're on vacation at Disney or whatever. Like, when you take family photos on vacations, you don't hire a professional photographer to follow you around. You just take out your iPhone and snap a picture, right? Or if you're posting on Insta or Facebook and you're trying out a pizza place and you have a great slice of pepperoni pizza, you don't have a professional photographer following you there documenting the journey, right? You just take out your phone and you take a picture. And I think what a lot of people with their social media ads get wrong is there's a little bit of an ego effect of, I want my stuff to look really polished. I want it to look professional. And I certainly understand that, especially if you're in the restaurant industry, where part of how people evaluate your food is the presentation of it, right? In advertising, again, social media in particular, when you see something and you're scrolling your newsfeed and it's this immaculate, polished, thought out picture that's just like perfectly laid out, has the perfect depth of field, color saturation, like it's clearly like a professional photo, people scroll right past that because they know that they're looking at an ad, right? They might not even verbalize that. Like, they might not even know why they just scrolled by it, but instantly in their brain, subconsciously, what's happening is when you see a perfect looking video or photo, you just keep scrolling because it's an ad and I'm not going to waste what little time I have on earth reading ads. So the trick to be successful on social media is to paradoxically make your ads not look like ads. And so use photos that aren't super polished, that just, hey, a random picture I took on my iPhone, right? Write a story about, you're a real estate agent, a huge part of our philosophy is promote small businesses in your community, promote things to do in your community, local church events or the school band concert or a local hockey tournament or football game coming up that has nothing to do with real estate. Because by doing all this constantly as a real estate agent, you're positioning yourself as the local expert. And you're positioning yourself as the champion of the community. Hey, I'm constantly sharing community stuff on my page, giving shout outs to local small businesses, essentially writing reviews of a local pizza place or my favorite coffee shop or my favorite bakery and their cream cheese cinnamon rolls, right? And so we might tell a real estate agent, keep in mind, this ad has nothing to do with real estate. Hey, a great Facebook ad for your real estate brand would be, go to your favorite bakery, take a photo of their cream cheese cinnamon rolls that you love so much, and then just grab the owner or the manager or whatever and talk to him for 5 minutes and interview them like off camera. Interview them on, hey, what is the process of how you guys make these cinnamon rolls every morning? What time do you have to wake up? What time are you actually in the kitchen here putting these things in the oven? What is the prep process for that look to make sure that these are hot and fresh every morning by 6 a.m. or 6:30 or whenever they open? What are the ingredients? Like, where are you getting your cream cheese or your cinnamon or like your dough or what is the, and get the backstory and then type up an essay about why you love this bakery. And you can have it start by, so I was talking to the owner recently at such and such bakery. I've always loved their cream cheese cinnamon rolls because it's so obvious that they're not just ordering mass produced frozen rolls that they reheat. Here's the truth. They wake up every morning at whatever, 5 a.m. so they can be at the shop by 5:45 a.m. They put them in the oven and like you basically tell the story. And you can just end it by saying, I have so much respect for local small business owners who are willing to make that sacrifice, even though they're not getting rich doing it. They're not an investment banker. They're not running some insanely billion-dollar business, but they serve the community in their own way by having these incredible cinnamon rolls. And it's little places like this that make this community worth living in. And so you're basically writing like a love letter essay about this small business owner. It has nothing to do with real estate. There's no awkward call to action at the end about, P.S. if you know anyone thinking about buying a house, give me a call. There's no call to action. There's no ulterior motive, no agenda. You're literally just like, you write ads like this. And if it's a photo, like maybe it's a selfie picture of you holding their cinnamon roll in the morning. If that popped up in someone's newsfeed as an ad, they would never consider it. It wouldn't even cross their mind that what they're seeing is an ad. right? It just looks like you giving a shout out to a local business. But over time, if they consistently see you making posts like this about events in the community, or like I said, a local youth football game coming up, or a cool event a local church is doing, or maybe even you highlight, if you're a restaurant, you highlight another restaurant that you love in the area.
Yes.
What I think would be actually really cool is if I owned a pizza shop, do an ad giving a shout out to another pizza shop of, hey guys, we're biased because we love our pizza and we think it's great, but I'm going to surprise you here and I'm going to give a shout out to, if on nights that I don't eat my own pizza, here's my favorite pizza in town that's not Tim's Pizza, whatever. And then write an essay about why, from pizza entrepreneur to pizza entrepreneur, you respect this place because you know that they do a great job. That would actually cause an increase in your own business because people would respect you way more that you're willing to have an abundance mindset and actually give a shout out to another local restaurant. That makes you more likable, right? Same thing is true if you own an Italian restaurant or a steakhouse or whatever. I'm not saying lie. If you think another Italian place actually sucks and they cut corners or something, like, don't lie and say they're good. But if there is another restaurant in your area that you deeply, like, intellectually respect, and you, it's, hey, game respects game, right?
Yeah.
Give them a shout out as a restaurant owner, and that'll actually blow up an engagement for you in a good way, because people will be like, wow, that's super cool that you're willing to give shout outs to other, to basically to your competition, right? Again, it's putting the social back into social media. Way too many people, because targeting got so easy over the last 5 to 7 years, way too many people rely on just constant discounts or coupons or offers or just really promotional ads that look like ads, right? That I think we're due for kind of a renaissance in advertising creativity and just putting a little bit more intellectual creative effort into the ads that we write. That's really the secret of platform. Like, it's not rocket science. Like, we didn't discover some secret subsetting in the Facebook ads manager or how we set up SEO or something that other people just don't know about. There's not some secret drop-down menu with genius targeting that allows us to get cheaper clicks than other companies do for our clients. We just put extra creative effort into writing, like, actual essays for posts that when they pop up in people's news feeds, it doesn't look like an ad. So if I owned, what's the most common type of restaurant that you guys work with? Actually, I'll just ask you, like, is it Italian places? Is it taquerias? Is it, I don't know, pizzerias, steakhouses?
Honestly, we work with Spanish pincho bars. We work with soup franchises, speakeasy cocktail bars. So at this point, there isn't one common one, although we do have 4 different pizzerias. So why don't I go with pizzeria for the sake of your question?
Sure. Like, I would write an essay about the history of pizza and how my pizzeria, how we fit into this centuries, actually 1,000-year history of pizza. Because they were actually a flatbread dishes that were even eaten by the ancient, like, Egyptians. And it goes back literally thousands of years. They had flatbread dishes that were surprisingly similar to modern pizza. They obviously didn't have that word, but the modern conception of pizza really can be traced back to Naples, Italy. I think it was about four or 500 years ago. And it was a food of poor people because they needed something easy to eat that could be sold on street corners from street vendors. And it was basically flour, water, made the dough, put some tomatoes on there, sprinkle some cheese and random other ingredients, garlic and whatever. And it was like a simple dish that you could carry on the go. It wasn't fancy. And it was very much looked down on by the Italian nobles of the day. Like, the upper classes sneered at people who ate pizza because it was like a poor person's food. And now it's this, obviously, all of the Italian immigrants in the early 20th century that came to America brought these traditions with them to, like, New York when they emigrated via Ellis Island. And pizza took on a unique Italian American character at that time. But, like, pizza as a concept has been around for literally millennia. So I don't randomly know all this. I very recently actually helped write an essay for one of our clients about the history of pizza. So that's why all that is off the top of my head. As an example, it was a realtor who did this post though. So we tell our clients, give shout outs to local businesses. And then what we did is we tied that into this local pizzeria that was in this town that they were in. We said, this is why I love this place, because I feel like this place is truly authentic. It's not Pizza Hut. It's not Domino's. Like, they're really trying to honor the intellectual history of pizza going back to Naples, Italy, however, 500 years ago. And I like to think that this is what it might have tasted like in Italy hundreds of years ago. And so we wrote this post. It's literally just a selfie picture of the guy holding a slice of pizza from Michelangelo's Pizza. I forget what town he's even in. And that's an ad for a real estate agent. If you owned the pizzeria, you could even go more in depth and you could maybe write an essay just about what makes pizza dough different than other types of dough, or all the various things you can make with flour and water, right? All the different types of bread and whatever. What makes pizza dough different than all of that, right? Or what often the sauce, let's say in pizza, is actually what like distinguishes great tasting pizza from other pizzas. Just the, it's the, literally just the freshness of the tomatoes. Most people can't put words to that. They just know, oh, this pizza tastes good and this one doesn't. But really when they say that, what they're saying is that like the sauce is really fresh. The actual tomatoes are not like frozen from a year ago type thing. So writing an essay about that, or maybe being really honest and vulnerable and saying, hey, here's the most popular special pizza we've ever come up with in terms of like weekly specials or like flavors, right? Here's the worst special we've ever come up with. We thought this one was going to be good and everyone hated it, right? And like actually share that. Like, no one liked this particular pizza, and just be honest, because that'll get you more engagement and makes people respect you more. Another post I like for local restaurant owners is to tell a story of like how hard it was launching the business and be as vulnerable as possible. So if you have an inspirational kind of sob story of like, when we started this business, we maxed out our credit cards, we sold our car, we were living in sharing an apartment and like put every dollar we had into this. And there were some weeks where we had to not pay some of our bills because we literally did not have money to pay. It was basically choosing what bill we were going to pay on time that month, and just sharing how hard it was. And it was like, this specific day or this specific week, we thought we have to shut down the business. It's losing so much money. We're never going to make it. We're never going to climb out of this debt. Because I think a lot of restaurant owners, my dad used to own a restaurant actually growing up, and he lost a ton of money on it. But I think a lot of restaurant owners that are successful have that origin story of, I can pinpoint the exact week and the exact day that I was this close to shutting it all down, because we got a surprise bill from taxes we didn't know we owed, or the health inspector came by, or we realized we had underpaid our suppliers and that all of a sudden we owed $10,000 we didn't realize that we needed to pay. And that was the day I thought I was going to shut it down and just close shop and basically stop the bleeding. And I'm so glad I didn't, because what happened next year is it completely turned around and we started to go viral on social media or whatever. Business picked up and now we're really successful, but I was so close to shutting down then. And so you write this post basically and say, if there are any other restaurant owners out there that are feeling defeated and feeling like they need to give up, but you deeply think your food tastes great and that you could just be successful if enough people heard about you, I just want to give you the motivation to keep going, because we were there ourselves and now we're thriving. Like, that kind of post doesn't look or feel like an ad, but I'm saying write that out as an essay and then run it as a paid Facebook ad, because that will blow up with comments and shares and engagement, because it's like, it's a human story. It's inspirational. And it happens to be coming from your pizzeria's Facebook page, whatever, but it doesn't look or feel like an ad. And so that's really the one sentence litmus test, is start writing more ads that don't look like ads.
Yeah, I love that. We actually have, there are a few things, I have a few things going on in my head right now, because we have this takeoff sequence that we help restaurants execute that helps them get lift and get more attention, awareness, blah, blah, blah. And one of those are just what we call brand building awareness ads, where what we're looking to do are share stories or educational insights and giving folks a look under the hood. And we just run those as awareness ads. Like you said, there's not really any call to action. It's just how can we build a bit of fame, and how can we help people know you better and at a more intimate level in your community, in your local neighborhoods. And so one part of my question is how you deliver that aspect of your service. And then this is breaking so many interviewing rules here, because I'm going to ask you, actually, before we hit that, you did say something about how folks they're over-reliant on offers and coupons and things like this. And that is so something else that we help them do is we help them extend what we call offer-driven ad campaigns. And I call them handshakes at scale. This is something that we can extend to the local market we can trigger that. We can start the relationship off with some reciprocity, give them something. The caveat is the offer has to actually be generous And it can't just be like a 15% discount, because that again is like an example of an ad that looks like an ad and people scroll right by it. Nobody cares. But if it's actually a truly, I call them magnetic goodwill offers, then we can give people something and we build up that database. And so I'd love for you to just riff on that aspect of the service. And yeah, and I just love to hear what you have to say about that.
I would say from an advertising perspective, would I use coupons or discounts or offers or like a magnetic offer to get someone's contact information? Yes, absolutely. Because you have to build an email list. If you're marketing as a restaurant owner is not building an email list and a text list so that you have an actual database, you're wasting your money, right? That's like priority number one. But adjacent to that is, I think as marketers, we've forgotten over the last decade that having an email list and generating leads isn't everything, right? Like one thing I'll say in a lot of my talks at conferences and whatnot is that marketing is not synonymous with lead generation. Way too many online marketers just think that lead generation is marketing. It's part of marketing, but lead generation is not synonymous with marketing. So like a really interesting exercise that mentor challenged me years ago was like, if you're marketing a business and you couldn't offer any sort of discount or free trial or promotion coupon, you had to only sell it at full price, but your ads had to be so creative and so interesting that it brought people in without offering or mentioning any sort of discount or offer, what would you run as your ads? And that completely changes your mindset as an advertiser, as a business owner, when you realize that, okay, every now and then I can sprinkle a little fuel on the fire by offering a discount to get a short-term spike in clicks and leads and sales. But like the core of your marketing, of the advertising strategy, should be generating goodwill and loyalty to your brand such that you don't have to offer any sort of discount whatsoever, right? So that's probably how I would think about it. Yeah, you need to generate leads, right? For sure. Most of your ads should just be like making your product so interesting that you actually think, okay, how can we actually raise prices? Because clearly demand is there. And for restaurant owners, raising prices is where marketing gets really interesting, because obviously you're typically operating at 20% profit margin at the end of the day, if you're lucky. Often a lot less than that if you're a restaurant owner. I'm not saying like food cost. I'm saying like at the end of everything. If you do $1 million a year in revenue, like most restaurant owners, if they're making any money at all off of $1 million in revenue, are probably making $100,000 or often less. They're not making $250,000 a profit off of $1 million in top line revenue. And so when your margins are relatively smaller, right, in the restaurant industry, raising your price by as little as 10%, 15% changes your margins dramatically, because that's just pure extra profit, right? In some instances, it can double your profit by raising your prices by 10%. So is your marketing, like, here's the point I'm getting at. Is your marketing, your Facebook ad copy, your YouTube videos, wherever you're spending your marketing dollars, right? Is your marketing so intellectually interesting and so just like delightful and surprising, where people actually look forward to reading your ads because you've put so much creative effort into writing these essays, these ads that don't look like ads? They actually feel like they're learning something when they read your ads. Like they're not being yelled at or sold to. They're just like genuinely educational. Like they're a delight to read. Like people look forward to your ads popping up in their newsfeed because they always learn something. It's always interesting, right? If you can hit that level of brand, if you can hit that level of branding, you can raise your prices 10%, 15%, and people don't care because they're like, oh, I love going to this pizza place, or I love going to this steakhouse, or I love going to this Italian place, whatever. And yeah, if I go order a chicken parm and it used to be $30 and now it's $34, you raise prices on me by 12% or whatever, like, I don't care. Like that, I absolutely do not care about that extra $4 going from $30 to $34. But that $4 to the business owner might literally represent a doubling of their profits. That's the power of marketing to me, is at the end of the day, it's not about clicks or likes or engagement or how many shares you get, because to pay your bills, you need US dollars, right? You don't need Facebook likes. And so to me, I think at the most 10,000 foot level, like macro, when I look at what is the role of marketing, whether it's for a restaurant business or a real estate agent, right? It's setting you up so that your brand is so respected that you're able to charge more than your competitors and have higher margins, because that's over time how you win. And you can't do that if your marketing is boring and commoditized and there's no differentiation between you and the other pizza place across town or you and the other bakery or whatever. And I think marketing has a lot to do with that. If your marketing is more interesting, people will want to participate in that because they feel like they become a part of your story by supporting you and buying your pizza or buying your bagels or going to your steakhouse. Or
yeah, I think a tremendous takeaway that someone could walk from what you just said was, instead of optimizing for likes, engagement, or whatever vanity metrics they like to optimize for, being intellectually interesting and optimize for respect. I think that to me is, if I can walk away from a client and we help them be intellectually interesting to their market and we help them win or earn more respect in their market, that's like job well done. And then of course, as a corollary, they earned more revenue, higher profits, and all the other, you know, yep, things that we, I love that. I am really curious though, what your advice, given that we need to build up a database of names, phone numbers, emails, birthdays, whatever. As I'm just curious, okay, we could build that database in-house. We could build it from the folks who are making reservations and have marketing opt-ins there. How else would you, like, where else does your brain go when it comes to how a restaurant could efficiently and effectively grow that database that they can be in touch with on their terms?
I think partnerships are probably the most underweight part of most people's marketing strategy. Yes, you should be running birthday campaigns and newly engaged, married, new people moving to town, all these sort of like trigger life events that make it a great reason to give them a coupon or something to get their contact information and get them to check out your restaurant, right? Like, you should keep doing all that. I think the point I'm making is that most marketing strategies for most restaurant owners, and this is not picking on restaurant owners because this is true of all local small business owners, but obviously this podcast is about the restaurant space. Most people are so far weighted to the lead gen side that they're not doing any sort of interesting creative marketing. Totally. And that's, I think we just need to correct that imbalance a little bit. But on top of that, I was saying, look into partnerships. What if you identified, hey, what are some local small businesses in town that maybe have nothing to do with my restaurant? From a logic perspective, they have nothing to do with me, but I know that their customer is probably the demographic of customer I want. So how can I get more of their customers to become my customers? And maybe you give them a deal that, like, hey, go to a CrossFit gym in your town. Let's just say if you're like a steakhouse, people who CrossFit are into health and fitness. They're into their macros. They want to eat a lot of protein every day. Steakhouse is probably a good fit. They're also willing to spend a lot of money because the CrossFit gym is usually $100, $200 a month, right? It's not like a $20 a month membership. So if someone has the disposable income to spend whatever, $150 a month on a CrossFit membership, that's probably the type of household that could go to your steakhouse, right? Like, they'll have the money to, right? They're not necessarily eating at McDonald's or whatever every night. So maybe what you do is you give each of them a coupon that you can come into my restaurant and literally get 50% off or something like that. And you could give them to the owner and say, hey, give this coupon to all your members. And when they come in and redeem it, that's when you get their contact information. Cause I bet a lot of them would, maybe not 100% of their members, but if it's that good of a deal, like, half their members might come in, and let's say they have 200 members at their gym. So if you can get 100 people to come in from that partnership, who cares about the fact you gave them their meal half off, because you still broke even? It's not like you lost money doing that, especially if they order any drink whatsoever. Like, you're going to break even on that initial visit. But now you just for free gained 100 paying customers on your database, and it didn't cost you anything because you didn't have to run any ads to get it. It was just tapping into the database that another business already had. And so think of all the different businesses in your community that you could do these joint ventures like that with. Financial advisors, same thing. Think of all the lawyers, CPAs in town that, like, have higher net worth types of clients. The luxury auto dealerships in town, you could ask them, hey, would you like to host a client appreciation event at our restaurant? All that we ask is that everyone who shows up, that, like, we can collect their contact information, and you can say that they're paying for it. So they look like, to their clients, oh, wow, they're so generous, they paid for all of it. But in reality, what you're doing is you're like, we'll give it to you for half off. So if someone comes in and orders a filet mignon, and that normally that dish is $50 on the menu, we'll give it to you for $25. in exchange for you sharing your customers' contact data with us so we can add them to our database. There are all sorts of like creative, proactive partnerships you could do with businesses in your community who already have the customers you want. Mm-hmm. You just get them to share them with you. And that way you don't even technically have to run a bunch of ads. You just want to get to the point where your database is large enough to where if you have a slow day or a slow month coming up, that you can send out some emails, do some promotion, you can turn a slow month into a great month. You don't want to obviously have to over rely on that, because the more that you're constantly sending texts or emails, you burn through the social capital you have with your database. And that's why I'm so big on relying on brand and relying on the creativity of the messaging of your ads, because that allows you to cause sales surges without just constantly dangling discounts.
Yeah. And if you're doing what you suggest in the first place, which is being intellectually interesting, sharing actual stories and actual educational insights, you can share that with your database as well. And so would you not then grow the social capital of, or that relational capital that you have with that list, right?
Yeah. It's don't get a customer to make a sale. You want to make a sale to get a customer. Like, getting the customer is actually the goal, not just the initial transaction. So to the extent that you're building your list, you're generating leads for your database, whatever, you're getting people's name, email, phone number. Yeah, you can offer discounts and coupons and stuff, but you want to always pair that with the intellectually interesting, creative content. If I owned a burger place, like, one video I might do, or maybe it could be photos, is I'd go to Wendy's, I'd go to Burger King, I'd go to McDonald's, and I'd go to some random mid-tier fast casual place, like a Five Guys burger or something. And I would take pictures of all the burgers that I ordered and be like, hey, I personally went through the drive-thrus, or I personally stopped and ordered burgers. These are undoctored photos. This is what it looked like when they served me. And then take a picture of their menu, what the burger looks like on the menu screen or whatever, and then take a picture of what you actually got, because it'll be like obviously horribly different. And then take a picture of what your burger looks like on your menu or on your website versus what your burger looks like when it's actually served, because obviously you can make sure it looks good, and say, and just have the ad copy be all these essentially before and after pictures of how your burger compares to McDonald's, Burger King, whatever. And say, like, around here, we're not ashamed if customers take pictures of their food because we know it looks as good on the plate as it does on the menu. And then maybe you even add a PS to this, because I love adding in copywriting what's called a damaging like admission, where you're admitting to something that's could make you look bad, but it actually just creates trust. So you would put PS, yes, our burgers cost a little bit more than the competition's. We're not going to lie about that. Going through the drive-thru at McDonald's is less expensive than stopping into whatever your restaurant's name is. However, we think paying a couple extra dollars more to get a burger that's actually fresh, that actually tastes good, that you actually enjoy, is worth it. And our customers seem to agree. Something like that. And adding that in at the end, that you're like low-key bragging that your burgers cost more because look at the difference, right? Look at what our burgers look like compared to the competition's. That would be a brilliant ad, and that would get so much engagement and shares in the community, because there'd be all sorts of people commenting, oh, I hate it when you get food from a restaurant that doesn't look at all like what it does on the pictures. Or, and you can use that same example with anything else, with pizza, with Italian, with a steakhouse, whatever, because there's all sorts of examples of what the food actually looks like when it comes out versus the way it looks on a commercial or whatever. So I'm always just looking for, like, how can I have ads that are actually enjoyable to read, where I look forward to such and such restaurant's ads popping up in my newsfeed, because they're always something interesting. I know it's going to be worthwhile to click and read. They always, like, they're just writing something that's worth reading, right? Rather than just generic copy about, we grind our ground beef fresh every day and we use fresh this and that. And yeah, everyone says that. You got to do better than that if you're writing copy for a restaurant. Like, every ice cream place is going to say that they get their dairy from local cow or local dairies, or every steakhouse is going to say that they're proudly grass-fed, or we source our beef from here. Everyone says that now. That was interesting to say 20 years ago, not really anymore. What's something interesting that I can learn from your ads that I wouldn't learn from just following Burger King or McDonald's on Facebook? You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think the best results, most restaurants what they tend to do is they look to their left, they look to their right, they look at what other people are doing, they take ideas, and then they come up with their own thing. But if instead you look inward, or you look backward at your own story and forward on the forward trajectory of your own story, probably the juiciest, most interesting pieces, that's where you'll find them. And then I just want to make one remark for the audience about discounting, because that's something I really shy away from that word because it cheapens brand, blah blah blah. Yeah. But the interesting thing is that if you joint venture with somebody and you get them to extend that discount as an exclusive partnership thing, you actually protect your restaurant's pricing because it comes from them and not you. And so that is a way that I believe discounts can be powerfully leveraged to grow that database within the community and also strengthen relationships. Tim, I want to be respectful of your time and bring this to a close here. And so I just have one more question and then a set of rapid fire questions. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, let's go. Yeah.
Okay. I'm just curious, how are you staying sharp over the next year, and what are you most excited about?
What am I most excited about over the next year? I'm excited that the Fed will eventually start cutting interest rates at some point over the next year, because I own an advertising agency that works primarily with real estate agents. I'm also the partner, a partner in a mortgage brokerage. And of course, both of those businesses are hyper sensitive to changes in interest rates. Obviously, it affects the entire economy when they raise or lower rates, but it definitely affects real estate and mortgage instantly when they raise or lower rates. So that'll be great whenever the Fed decides to cut rates, whether it's later this year or next year, who knows? That'll be great. But even for all other businesses too, like if you own a restaurant, when rates come down, people spend more money. That'll be a good thing to look forward to. So if you're barely hanging on right now as a restaurant owner, just realize there's light at the end of the tunnel from an economic perspective, because the Fed will eventually cut rates and the economy will get going again.
Awesome. Awesome. Okay. And then all right. So you ready for the rapid fire round of cues?
All right, let's do it.
What's your favorite drink?
Milk, whole milk.
So what is whole milk? That's not 4%.
I don't even know what it is. Just whole milk.
Homogenous.
Yeah.
So of all those books behind you on your shelf, what is the one that you're like, this made the biggest impact, or it's the most memorable? Is that something you're able to tell us?
Yeah. So I actually have a library in my office here. I have like over 2,000 books. And there's actually this wall behind me. Oh. And then on the other side of my office, like over there, there's the same thing. It's like floor to ceiling on both walls. It's just books. I would say Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand probably changed my philosophy on life more than any other book. And then the book, The Fountainhead, by Ayn Rand. It's
finish.
Those two books, Atlas Shrugged is really hard to read. It's like a 1200 page book and it's very dense. So you have to read it slow and you can't skim it. The Fountainhead is a much easier read. It's like half the length and it honestly probably has a better plot, a better story. But what The Fountainhead is about is just, what does it mean to be an original creative thinker in a world that's conformist and a world that kind of wants you to do what everyone else is doing? What does it mean to actually be an independent thinker? And it's a novel about an architect named Howard Roark who wants to be creative in his designs. And he doesn't just want to copy what other people have done. He actually wants to be creative in his building designs. And it's just a fantastic novel. So I would highly recommend. They're both written by an author who was actually a Russian immigrant to America after the Russian Revolution. She fled to escape communism. And her name is Ayn Rand. It's A-Y-N and then Rand, R-A-N-D. So if I had to pick one, I'd say The Fountainhead by Ayn Rand, because that's an easier book. And if you enjoy that, then you should also read Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah, one of my recent guests also said Fountainhead. And I read Fountainhead when I was like 13 or 14.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so I found it really hard to read. I remember it being on my shelf for like 7 months, just working my way through.
If I read that at age 13, I probably would have had no idea what was going on when I read it. So
I'm
a due for a reread. I think I read it when I was like 20 or 21 or something like that. And it's been a decade since I've read it. So I probably need to reread it again.
I definitely do. Okay. What course or resource or even mentor has had the biggest impact on you?
Probably if I had to be specific, like reading Dan, basically every book that Dan Kennedy has ever written. But I will also say there's limitations to a lot of what Dan Kennedy writes about, because he's so focused on direct response marketing that I think sometimes he misses like the forest for the trees, and that he thinks branding and advertising and like creative advertising is a waste of time. But I think there's a sweet spot where when you find out how to combine those two things, that's where you can make a lot of money.
Yeah. Is there a tool you're really excited about right now? Some kind of a gee whiz, something or other?
Honestly, no. I think work works.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just put more creative effort into, like, I operate an ad agency, obviously. So for me, it's put extra time into writing more creative ads. Rather than spending half an hour writing an ad, spend 3 hours writing that ad and really make it interesting and creative. And the ROI you'll get from that is way, way exceeds what some AI or automation software tool might save you by speeding up some process or whatever. I think, honestly, automation and AI, this is my hot take that's contrarian. Automation and AI is way overblown right now. Will it probably change the world and completely change the way we do business within the next 5 years? Yeah, probably. But most people are wanting it to be something it's not. And they're just, like, unwilling to do interesting creative work. And at the end of the day, to the extent that AI streamlines a lot of things and frees up our time, it's so that you can focus on more creative things that AI can't necessarily do, right? Mm-hmm. That's a future that we all need to lean into, regardless of whether or not AI ends up changing everything a lot or changing everything just a little bit, right? Like, the people who are more creative and can figure out ways to leverage their creativity are gonna be the people who win in the future.
Yeah, it frees you up. It frees you from the doing of the ads, the posts, the SEO, all the kind of technical, the mechanical stuff, so that you can focus more on the stories and the insights and the stuff that the connective tissue that'll actually help your message reach people. And okay, just two more here. What's your all-time favorite restaurant experience?
My all-time favorite restaurant experience. Man, that's tough because I'm not a foodie at all. I've definitely gone to my fair share of really nice restaurants over the years, but I also have no problem grabbing a burger at a neighborhood burger joint or going out for a slice of pizza or whatever. Like, I'm not sophisticated in that way. Yeah. Like, our business has been, our business has been pretty successful. So I can, like, afford to go out to pretty much any restaurant I want whenever I want. But that's not how I spend my money. So I'm not the person who goes and samples different wines and comments on the notes of this or that in the food, or I just, like, food's good or it's not. I don't know. I'll say this. So I was actually on a Disney cruise like a year ago. I think it was on the Disney Magic. And they have one of the upgraded kind of VIP restaurants on board. That's not just like the all you can eat buffet that everyone gets. You have to pay extra to go to this restaurant. And they actually have, I think, a Michelin rated chef back there who's making the food. And it's all the ingredients are, like, truly freshly sourced. Like, it's not, it was an Italian place. If they're serving something with tomatoes, you can tell these tomatoes are, like, fresh. They're not the same tomatoes you find on the rest of the ship on, like, the buffets. And I had the best lasagna I think I've ever had at that restaurant. And just everything about it, you could tell the food is fresh. It's called Palo, I think, P-A-L-O. And are there, like, way better restaurants on earth? Yes, absolutely. I'm sure there are. But this place, I remember just everything I tasted was, like, you could just tell the ingredients were fresh. And so many restaurants don't do that anymore, where everything from the cilantro to the cheese to the beef and the seasonings and the beef and the lasagna and the bread that they brought, you could tell, okay, this bread wasn't baked last night or this morning and then they kept it on a heat lamp. This literally just came out of the oven. Like, this is fresh. Like, all those little things, like, I can definitely appreciate that. I'll also end with this rant because I just ranted to my wife last night. We went to a Mexican place and grabbed tacos, like a local place where I live. And it was good. We'll definitely go back. The food was good. But we ordered, like, the fried ice cream that pretty much every local Mexican place has on their dessert menu. And it just comes caked in, like, Ready Whip. And I'm just like, God, I wish. I'm a libertarian, so I'm against government passing laws on everything. I just think 99% of laws that exist should be erased from the books. There's too much government in our lives, but I would be all for passing a law that says if you own a restaurant and you use Ready Whip in your desserts rather than actual fresh made whipped cream, like, you should be round up and shot, like, firing squad. I just think it's ridiculous that you go out to eat and order dessert that costs whatever, $10, $15, and, like, they use Ready Whip. It's seriously, you can't make your own whipped cream. It would be like going to a place and ordering, like, I use this example all the time. It'd be like going to a pizza place, ordering a pizza, and, like, surprise, we served you, like, a tombstone pizza, like a frozen pizza. And we just sprinkled some Parmesan cheese on it or something, but it's like a frozen pizza. That's what restaurants do every time they say there's whipped cream on a dish and it's actually just like ready whip out of a can. It drives me absolutely crazy that they can't take the time to make fresh whipped cream. So that's my angry, unhinged rant.
Definitely. I think that's sacrilege to do that. Okay. Finally, Tim, is there anything I should have asked you, but I did not?
You're like, yeah, you're like, holy shit. We can't end the interview on that crazy, angry sounding. We have to have one more question. Yeah. I would just say whether you own a restaurant, whether you own an insurance agency or real estate office, maybe you're a CrossFit gym, you own a, you're a dentist and maybe you have a dental practice. Like all the principles of psychology and copywriting and advertising are the same because we're all selling to humans and humans refer via word of mouth the same way for any business, right? So whether it's a restaurant or anything else, just think like, how can I make my product more interesting and creative than other than the competition? So like your ads have to be interesting. Like one more litmus test, like if you couldn't discount your product ever to get people in the door, like how would you write your ads? How would you make your ads so interesting that if you can never use a discount again, right, that people would still come in? Another kind of similar litmus test is if you had to write ads that were so interesting that you would only be considered a success if people actually told you in real life, oh, I loved your Facebook post recently, or I loved that video on YouTube, or I love the Instagram post you made the other day, where you would only consider it a success if people were stopping and telling you in real life, I loved what you posted on Facebook last week. How would you change your social strategy? Right? Like where it has to literally become remarkable in the literal dictionary definition of that term, worth remarking about. Remarkable, worth remarking about. So it's so interesting that people tell you they loved your ads, right? Because when you look at the way that most restaurants advertise in the newspaper, or local radio, TV, direct mail, even like your ads are not so compelling that people are saying, oh my God, I loved your direct mailer last week. Or, oh, your radio ads just get me every time. Like no one is saying that, right? So that should be the standard. If you're going to spend money on ads, whether it's billboards or Facebook ads, YouTube videos, whatever, like it should be so interesting and thoughtful and creative that people actually talk about it in real life. That should be the standard that you hold yourself to when you're writing ads. And if you do, your business is going to be a lot more successful. And frankly, it's going to be a lot more fun.
That's a perfect note on which to end it. Tim, is there anywhere we can send people to connect with you?
Yeah. Our website actually for platform marketing is platformrealestate.com. If you know anyone looking for a mortgage, I'll give you a shout out to johngaltmortgage.com. That's J-O-H-N Galt, G-A-L-T. So johngaltmortgage.com. And the reason I bring that up, because I know that most of your listeners are not looking for a mortgage, but John Galt has a very interesting social media strategy. And on the John Galt Mortgage website, at least in my opinion, is a really creative example, advertising copy on a really boring industry, which is mortgages. Like we've really tried to create a fun, exciting brand at John Galt Mortgage, again, in an industry that's usually excruciatingly boring. So check out John Galt Mortgage for an example of what like advertising could be even in a boring product like financial services. And if you're interested in hearing more of our marketing insights, just check out the Platform Marketing Show. We have a podcast on both Apple and Spotify.
Tim, thank you so much for coming on. Really grateful for your insights, and we'll have to do it again.
All right. Thanks, man.
Thank you so much for tuning into this episode of Guest Getter. I'm your host, Kyle Guilfoyle. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. As always, you can head over to guestgetter.co to check out the resources in this episode's show notes and sign up for our weekly newsletter. That is it for today. We'll see you next time.